The following is intended solely for the use of those with a sense of adventure.
I'm shaking the dust of this town off my feet, and I'm going to see the world.
This is Travel with Hawkeye. Here's your host, Mark Hawkeye Lewis.
I know I always say this at the beginning of just about every travel podcast that we do, but I'm so excited about this week's guest. I've been wanting to get her on the air for quite some time. Gina Miller is a longtime sports broadcaster. She's from the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and she now works for FC Dallas in MLS, Major League Soccer. And she's very well-traveled, not just because of work, because that's her interest. She's got a great blog. That's how I kind of thought about having her on the show. She's got a great blog called TheGinaMiller.com, and we'll post that on our blog, too, if you forget the name of her blog. Before we get to that, I just want to kind of my producer's always on my case about this because I forget to mention the podcast. Our social media addresses, it's at Hawkeye On Air. We're the same thing on Twitter, on Instagram, and on Facebook. And I want to point that out because we got some exciting trips planned this upcoming spring and summer. And when we go on trips, we always send out Instagram stories and photos and stuff. So I just want to make sure everybody's on the same page with us. So at Hawkeye On Air, that's our address on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. All right. So, Gina, before we start talking about travel, can I brag a little bit about how we met?
I don't know if it's bragging, but sure.
I am on the board of the Dallas Marathon, and we had a celebrity relay team, and I asked Gina to be on it. And I was very familiar with your work, and someone said, you know, Gina runs. So I said, okay. So I asked you to be part of it, and everybody was saying, are you sure Gina can run? I'm like, she said she runs a little. You were like one of the fastest people on the relay team. You blew us all away.
I can run. I can't. It's those long legs. You know, I'm not fast, but I have endurance, so I can go for the long haul at a faster pace. Now, who said I couldn't run? I want to meet that person face to face.
I'm not going to tell you who it was, but I will say that you can run fast. You were at a very fast pace, and we set like an awesome time that day, and we raised a lot of money for charity, so it was a lot of fun. And I wanted to have you back this year, but unfortunately, you were traveling with FC Dallas, so I didn't get a chance to have you back.
Yeah, that soccer keeps you busy. It really does. It's a year-round sport, and once the season ends, it's preparing for the next season or taking advantage of Champions League play. There's a lot going on in the soccer world.
Yes, there definitely is. And, you know, I don't follow soccer as much as I do other sports. I'm a big fan of the World Cup. And I bet you're just as disappointed as I am that the World Cup, which is right around the corner, is not going to have an American team this year.
Absolutely. It was devastating. You know, and we had a very good chance of having one of our own, a homegrown from Plano, Texas, and Kellen Acosta, be a part of the U.S. men's national team experience had the men's national team qualified for Russia and the World Cup this year. So it's pretty devastating. But we are making some lemonade out of those lemons, and we're going to enjoy the World Cup. There is still a chance that some FC Dallas players who are foreign could be participating in the World Cup. We have a veteran defender in Reto Ziegler who has been capped twice and played for the Swiss national team twice in the World Cup in 2010 and 2014. So there's still some opportunity for FC Dallas players, but it is disappointing that the U.S. men won't be represented in Russia this year.
I don't know how you feel about this, but I'm not really too excited about Russia hosting the World Cup.
Can I tell you, I've been to Russia, and I never want to go back. I mean, I hate to say that, but, you know, we saw what happened with the Olympics in Russia.
Uh-huh.
I think it's going to be interesting to watch. I'm putting my diplomacy hat on.
Okay.
Just saying, I think it's going to be interesting to watch over there.
I will say this, though. A couple weeks ago on the podcast, we had an Olympic super fan join us, and he has been to like every Olympic going back to 1996. And I asked him what was his favorite winter games. And he actually said it was the one in Sochi, Russia. And I was like,
really?
Yes. And I asked him why. He says, because it was so well organized, because it's an authoritarian state. He goes, you went through security once. And once you were in security, you were free to roam from venue to venue and all the different stuff. And it was just set up. He goes, when I'm in Korea, he goes, every venue has its own security. And it's just very difficult to get into different events. It takes forever. And that's why he likes Sochi so much. I'm thinking, okay, well, I mean, that's interesting. Now, when you went there, tell me the details on why you went to Russia.
So I went there on a cruise, a Baltic cruise back in the early 2000s, and St. Petersburg was one of the stops. And that Baltic cruise included Oslo, Norway, Helsinki, Finland, Stockholm, Sweden, some of the most beautiful historic places in the world. And Tallinn, Estonia, I believe, was on that one as well. But St. Petersburg, Russia was on one of the stops on the cruise, and just getting in and out of St. Petersburg was a nightmare. You had to have a visa to get into Russia. But, you know, if you wanted to pay a little bit extra, you could have bypassed the visa process, if you know what I mean.
Really?
And, yeah, it was interesting. And went to the Hermitage Museum, which was really fabulous, but it was interesting. And this was in the early 2000s. It was interesting because you're walking through the Hermitage and you would see this amazing piece of Renaissance artwork just laying up underneath a stairwell in a hallway. It was just interesting that it was so regimented, yet so careless in other places. It was a bit of a dichotomy, Russia was. And you'd go through the city in St. Petersburg. And again, there are these beautiful structures and then there are crumbling statues right next to them. So it was a living contrast, in my opinion. And that was, you know, we're going on 15 years ago. But it was a process getting in and out of there. Transportation was a process. The language barrier was a process because it wasn't, you know, one of those Latin languages where, you know, if I can just speak a little bit of Spanish, I can understand French and Italian as well. So you couldn't really understand the characters because I don't understand Russian or speak it or read it. So it was really a process all throughout the experience getting in and out of there.
You know, I've heard that that's a very beautiful city, though, the historic structures. Would you agree with that? Or would you say, like you said, it's like there's just too much of the dichotomy?
For me, the dichotomy was what struck me. And there's such beautiful architecture, and the Hermitage is just gorgeous. But then you've got this, you know, crumbling statue of Stalin. It really struck me as a living dichotomy and a contrast of two worlds, you know, one that wants to be modern and yet one that is still sort of stuck in a time period in which, you know, people weren't absolutely willing to or able to live their best and fullest lives, if you will.
You know what that kind of reminds me of is around 2001, I got a chance to go on a goodwill mission to Cuba. And you see, like, you've seen the pictures of Havana, old Havana, and how beautiful it is. And it's kind of preserved just because they have not had a chance to ever change anything. But on the outskirts of town, you have these Soviet made apartment complexes that are made of cinder blocks and have, like, you can see, you know, looks, we'd call it an Edison bulb today, but they would call it like all they have. And it's the same thing. It's like, you know, the older parts of Cuba look just striking and gorgeous. And then the parts that were built in the 60s, 70s and 80s are just tremendously stark and, you know, frightening. And you wouldn't want to live there, just cold. And I kind of got the same feeling that you got when you went to St. Petersburg.
Absolutely. And I've heard similar things from people who have visited Cuba. And it very was, I think you described it perfectly. It is that contrast of these beautiful, well-made, gorgeous structures, which, you know, pay homage to the history of the country. And then the communist era literally blocks, you know, like puzzle pieces, those structures that are just time stamped in a very weird era, in my opinion.
Yeah, you know, the Soviets were not into architecture.
No, they weren't.
No one's going to look back and call it, oh yeah, mid-century Soviet. Yes, it was a time period that was just great for architecture. Well, I read on your blog too that I guess it was in December that you went to Tel Aviv. Is that correct? The timeline?
Late November, actually, over Thanksgiving, I went to Israel to go visit my father.
Okay.
Yeah.
And so where all in Israel did you go to?
So my father lives in Tiberias, but he was dealing with some medical issues in Haifa. And it was actually my third trip over there. And there's really only one way in and out of Israel if you're traveling internationally, and that's just outside of Tel Aviv at Ben-Gurion Airport. So I went to Ben-Gurion Airport, flew in, and this was actually the first time where I didn't hunker down in Tel Aviv, to be real accurate there. Usually you go into Tel Aviv or go into Israel, you spend a day or two in Tel Aviv just getting situated. Then you go to Jerusalem, you go to Eilat, you go to Haifa, you go wherever you want to go. Well, this was more of a business trip for me this time because it was dealing with my dad, dealing with some medical issues. But it was such a quick trip that I did selfishly take a few days for myself. And I went to Herzliya, which, if we're talking about the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex, I would equate Tel Aviv to Dallas and Herzliya to, say, Frisco, but on the Mediterranean Sea.
Okay, Frisco on the sea.
Frisco on the sea. It's a wealthy suburb just north of Tel Aviv, and it was absolutely stunning. It's this beautiful resort town with truly yachts. That was a fascinating, wonderful, modern experience. And then from there, after a few days there, I went to Haifa to go visit my father in the hospital. And that was my first time to Haifa. And I just fell in love. It was my third trip to Israel. And it was the best trip. Haifa is a gorgeous, historic city, again, right on the ocean. And it was fabulous. I can't say enough beautiful things about it, from the people to the food to the architecture to, again, the history, which, you know, Israel is full of history. It's all over the place. I've been to Jerusalem, been to Tel Aviv, been to Tiberias, but Haifa really struck me as a cool, cool place to be.
Yeah, it sounds like you didn't even, I mean, I actually have never heard of it until I looked at your blog. It sounds like possibly you'd never been there and hadn't heard of it either.
Never been to Haifa before. I had heard of it because, you know, growing up Jewish, you learn all about Israel and all these things. But I'd never been there, never had any reason to go there. And so took the train. There's a great public transportation system. I trained it everywhere. And it's funny, you know, when you go through a train, in Israel, everyone goes through military training at the age of 18. So 2 years in the Israeli army. And most people carry their weapons with them. And wherever you go through security. And on the train, both times I took the train from Herzliya to Haifa and then from Haifa back to Ben Gurion Airport, I go through security on the train, and the security personnel is checking me, looking at me, and they ask me, they say, "What do you have for defense, a gun or a knife?" They ask me this.
Wow.
You know, dumb American. Well, I don't have anything. You know, I've got some high heel shoes, but nothing that heavy to defend myself. But yeah, took the train there. It was a great train experience, and spent 3 days in Haifa, just walking, going to the Baha'i Gardens, which is a beautiful historic religious site on the ocean, and just taking in all of Haifa had to offer. I had to spend a lot of time with my dad making some family arrangements, but I enjoyed every free moment I had there.
What can I ask you this? What's the security like when you fly in and out of the airport there?
It's everything you've heard and more. It is exactly what you've heard it is. It is an inquisition, mainly when you are getting ready to depart Israel. Going into Israel, I don't really recall too many, you know, terse inquisitions of why are you here? Who are you visiting? What are you doing here? Just they kind of check my passport and let me in. When I have left Israel, that's when it's pretty hefty. This particular time, gosh, I was actually pulled off to the side because I was a single woman traveling alone. And this was my second time there as a single woman traveling alone. And they pulled me off to the side, and it was about a 15-minute interrogation. Why are you here? Why does your dad live here? How long has your dad lived here? Where is he from? Did you grow up Jewish? Where did you have a bat mitzvah? Why do you not?
Where did you have a bat mitzvah? Wow.
Absolutely. I mean, and these are things, let's be honest, if you're a woman of a certain age, you're not remembering a lot of things,
yeah,
right? You know, I don't really remember these things. You know, do you speak Hebrew? Did you have any military training? Where do you worship back in Dallas? You know, it's really an interrogation that is deep. And it's not antagonistic. They're just doing their job. And I think if you approach that with that mindset that they're not being, you know, they're not attacking you, they're simply doing their job and vetting, then you're just fine. On a previous trip, I'll tell you, I stayed in Jerusalem about 8 years ago at a beautiful hotel, the King David in Jerusalem, right next to the old city. And I was there for 3 days, very safe hotel. John McCain had just been there the previous week. And my time there coincided with a businessman who was traveling, and he was a little more ethnic looking than me. I mean, I'm as white as they come, and he was a little more ethnic looking. First couple times into the hotel, I was wanded, even as a guest. I was wanded and interrogated going into the hotel. But after a few times, I guess I was in their system, and they just let me in and out every single time, no big deal. Every time that man went in, he was staying in the hotel. He was on the same executive floor as I was. They wanded him and interrogated him. There's no apologies in terms of their vetting process or their security processes there. They're going to interrogate you. They may profile you a little bit, and they don't apologize for it.
It's very interesting. You know, I've heard about the airport, but I had no idea, like, when you go to a hotel in the old city in Jerusalem, that you would get that kind of treatment.
Oh, it's not just there. You know, in Herzliya, I was staying at the Ritz-Carlton in Herzliya, you know, a luxury hotel. You check in there. There's a man outfitted, a valet, in a beautiful, you know, Ritz-Carlton-type suit. He's got an automatic weapon on his hip. They check you when you go in and out of there at the mall. The Ritz-Carlton Herzliya sits atop a mall, the Herzliya Mall. They wand you and check your bags when you go in. At the CVS in Jerusalem, for example, you know, their equivalent of a CVS, a drugstore, if you will. They were checking my bags and just making sure that I wasn't carrying anything I shouldn't be carrying. So it's everywhere. There is a presence of security in most places that I've been in Israel, which is something that we don't have here in the state.
Yeah, well, fascinating. Okay, I got to ask you a question that I asked of Eric Nadel when I had him on, because he gets to travel from city to city because, of course, he does the play-by-play for the Texas Rangers. You two, being a sports reporter now working for FC Dallas, you travel to different cities all the time. Is there like a city or two that is on the top of your list? You're like, oh, I love going to this town. I love when I get sent to this town on assignment.
Absolutely. There's so many. I mean, that's the best part of working in sports is getting to travel with a team. I just got back from Panama with FC Dallas. We played Taro FC in CONCACAF Champions League in late February. And Panama was amazing. It was my first time there. It was a beautiful city. The food was so good. We were right in the heart of Panama City. And I didn't leave the hotel much because I was so busy, but I got to walk along the Malecón adjacent to the beach. I mean, it was fabulous, and it makes me want to go back. In the States, I love traveling to Seattle in the Pacific Northwest. I mean, the food there is so good. The walkability of the city is so nice. We typically go in the summer, so it's about 112 in Dallas.
Yes.
And it's about, you know, 80 degrees in Seattle, so I love visiting Seattle and Portland. Trips to New York are always great simply because we typically have good transportation into the city. So we don't have to deal with subways or other things like that. And just anytime you can visit Manhattan, I think it's great. And, you know, playing in the Western Conference in Major League Soccer, we do get to visit Vancouver quite a bit, which is a beautiful city. I got to visit Montreal last year as FC Dallas played the Montreal Impact in Montreal. And that is in the summer.
Love
that,
it.
That's the
love
secret,
it.
Right?
Yes.
That is the secret. It was just beautiful weather, people speaking French. It's Europe and North America.
It really is. Okay, and let me ask you this about Montreal, because I swear to God, if you did not know it, just walking around Montreal, you would think the Montreal Expos still existed because they sell so much memorabilia. I mean, it's unbelievable.
They do. It's retro. It's like every day is retro day there. It's really pretty cool.
You know, it's a city of 5 million people, and they still love and miss the Expos. And here's my bucket list of life. If the Expos ever come back, if Major League Baseball ever puts a team back in Montreal, I want to be the play-by-play guy, the English version, obviously, of the play-by-play guy for the Expos. I love that city. It's just so gorgeous.
It's so gorgeous. But and as I was talking to people about that, I mean, I got a haircut there. I took full advantage because on longer road trips, I'll tell you, most teams, like the Mavericks or the Cowboys, they'll travel the day before a game. Well, FC Dallas, on those long road trips, we take 2 days. So we'll travel on a Thursday, say, for a Saturday game. So we've got all day in the city on a Friday. And I took full advantage of being in Montreal. I got my hair cut. I got my nails done. I did all sorts of things. So I'm talking to people, and I just, you guys have figured it out here. And they said, yeah, come back in December, when it's just brutal here. But that's a gig, man. I would be your play-by-play partner.
I'll write your name down for that.
Okay, very good. Very good.
You know, what's interesting too, is my wife and I, we went to Montreal, and it's an interesting history to that city, because if you remember back in the 60s and the 70s, they got Major League Baseball, which is the first team outside the U.S. It was actually the first expansion franchise that drew over a million, and that was pretty notable in its day. They had the World's Fair there, and then they also had the Olympics there. And you think about what is the biggest, most prosperous city in Canada now, you think Toronto, not Montreal. And right. So I was kind of reading about that, and in the 70s, they passed this rule that all business had to be conducted in French. You couldn't have French or English. And a lot of corporate headquarters moved, including the Bank of Montreal, moved to Toronto. And it really stagnated the city for years. And I asked someone who was Quebecois, I said, would you, if you, knowing what happened to your city after that, would you guys pass that rule again? And he said, in a second. Everybody
really?
Feels the same. Yes, in a second they would do. They care less on the fact that Toronto benefited from them passing that rule. And they consider themselves, you know, a special type of people. They're, you know, and, you know, they want to be their own country, too. I don't know if that will ever happen,
yeah.
But it'd be very interesting if that would happen. It always seems to just fail right at the last minute. But, yeah, so, you know, it's kind of interesting. This person was telling me when they grew up that if you grew up speaking French, you went to an English school and vice versa. Mm-hmm. If you grew up speaking English, you went to a French school. But after they passed that rule, all the English-speaking people, for the most part, which is about 60-40, moved to Toronto or moved out of Montreal.
That's fascinating. It's sort of like Catalonia.
Yes.
You know, it's the Canadian version of Catalonia, Barcelona, if you will. But you get that sense of nationalism in Montreal for sure, because they are French-speaking first. You know, it's bonjour wherever,
yes,
everywhere you,
yes,
go. And then that's about all I got. And then I start with English.
Yeah, and everybody knows English, too. That's the funny thing. Everybody knows English.
Cool. Yeah. And doesn't it make you feel kind of dumb? I mean, I go there and I try and speak the language and I have about two strong sentences in me. And then once they start talking to me in that rapid fire bullet pace, you know, my high school and college French just disappears. And I'm like, anglais, s'il vous plaît? And then they go right into this perfect English and I feel so stupid.
Well,
you know, it's just...
I always say that they always say Americans, you know, we only know one language. But I say it's difficult for us because we never really get an opportunity to practice it. And it's kind of like for an American learning a foreign language, it's like learning to ride a bike by reading a book about learning to ride a bike. And, you know, I mean, if you live in France and you drive to Germany, well, it behooves you to learn German because you're going to get to use it a lot.
You know? Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. You're right there. Yeah. Fortunately, at FC Dallas, we have so many people who speak foreign languages that our players are really pushing us and forcing us to broaden our language skills. So that's probably the best thing about working for FC Dallas is the ability to practice Spanish and French, because we have two players who speak French fluently. I mean, all of our guys speak three or four languages. And again, to your point, they've grown up in these countries where they're just within an hour's driving distance from another country that speaks another language. So that's one of the benefits of working here, besides the travel, is getting to expand your language skills.
All right. Before I let you go here, what is next on Gina Miller's bucket list? When you have time off, where do you want to travel to next or in the near future?
Yeah, I am dying to do the French Riviera. I mean, I've done Paris and I've done the wine country in France and Champagne quite a few times. I want to summer is a verb, on the French Riviera, whether it's Cannes, Nice. I've done Monte Carlo in the cruise, you know, on the cruise where it's a day stop there and you look at the casino because you can't afford to go in the casino.
Yeah.
But I want to have the experience of summering, you know, in the south of France on the Riviera and really living that sort of, you know, that F. Scott Fitzgerald life on in the Riviera, just soaking it all up and being as indulgent as I can be without having any regrets about it. But I have Mexico coming up next. I love Mexico. It's such a we're so lucky to live so close to this beautiful country just south of us. It's a 2-hour plane ride away. So I'm going to Riviera Maya next month, and just I like taking advantage of Mexico as much as I can. But French Riviera is high on that list.
Well, I hope you get there very, very soon. It was an engaging conversation. I really enjoyed talking with you. Gina Miller, you can find her website, thegina.miller.com. It's a lot of fun to go through. There's some great photos of her trip to Israel, too, and I highly suggest you take the time to check that out. And Gina, continued success, and thanks again for just spending some time with us.
Oh, thank you. I could talk travel all day with you. Would love to talk soccer with you, so let me know anytime you want to come to an FC Dallas match.
I definitely take you up on that.
Okay.
Thanks so much to Gina Miller for joining us on our podcast this week. I'm Mark Hawkeye Lewis. You've been listening to the Travel with Hawkeye podcast. Remember, the world is out there. Your adventure awaits.